It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Coming up on episode number 103 of Sports Day Plus, spending the hour with my old friend Kevin Dunn, talking Longhorn spring game, the NFL draft, and the Longhorns losing a former starter to the transfer portal. I am your host, Trey Elling. Give me a follow on Twitter, at Courtesy Wave, and do the same for ESPN Austin at 1027 ESPN. My guest for the hour needs no introduction. You know him from so many different things in the media and otherwise over the years. Most importantly, he is my best friend. It is the great Kevin Dunn. What's up, KD? How we doing today?
I'm doing great. Busy morning, which is always good, but kind of have the rest of the day to coast some emails. But nothing better than talking to you, brother. We talk off the air, but we haven't talked on the air in a little bit. So let's have some fun. We got some stuff to talk about, too.
For hours, hours we talk. It literally costs me sleep at nights, but every next morning I wake up a little bit tired saying, you know what, that was well worth it.
Hey, before I ask you this.
Yeah.
So, we'll get on three-way calls, you know, with buddies you have or I have, and they get a kick out of you or me, and we'll talk for hours like schoolgirls. I was with a group of guys, we're all friends, and we were grilling a couple weekends ago, and we were laughing that the three of us had one of those 2.5 hour conversations where wives are coming in saying, hey, what's going on? Like, are you cheating on me? You know, go to bed. And one of the guys who's not involved in him said, that's really strange and weird. And we're like, well, it's not like a Bukkake video. Like we're just on the phone talking, catching up as guys in our 40s, you know?
Maybe it's weird to some people. It depends on the individual. It's not weird for me, but I'm a part of these conversations all the time. But you and I, minus the third person being added in via conference call, we talk regularly, and sometimes those calls go for 30 or 45 minutes, and sometimes they last several hours. It's just the nature of the beast. It's why you and I have such an easy time filling time whenever we're doing so in an official capacity like this, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, I know some people, and trust me, I mean, it's probably the growth of anyone doing broadcasting. But I mean, when I first started, like the amount of prep I did and over prep was just too much. And you got to kind of find that middle ground. But you and I can go in, you know, naked, and seemingly people still really like the show, because I think it's just two guys BSing that are obviously really good friends that are interested in a lot of different stuff.
Yeah, we have ideas for what to talk about, but ultimately I can never completely predict where the conversation is going to take us. And that's why I'm happy and really excited that we're getting to do this going forward in a slightly different format. It's more structured because it's radio and we have commercial breaks, but good luck predicting where we're going to head over the next almost 55 minutes now, because he and I don't know. So for you to be able to guess accurately is a fool's errand.
So, hey, I know we're, what's the cussing factor on this? We're back on radio, so.
It's the same rules as it applies to all the comedians that I have on the show. You use the language that you need to use, and I'll worry about the rest. I'll make sure we avoid FCC violations.
Yeah.
Mark the tape. I'm not going to lie. I said a little bit earlier today when I saw that the Longhorns lost another guy to the transfer portal. This being a dude who has more experience than any of the other five or six guys who have entered the portal up to this point from Steve Sarkisian's roster. Now, yesterday, Savion Redd announced that he was going into the transfer portal. And as I mentioned on Twitter, I probably took that a little bit harder than I needed to. But Savion Redd is a dog, and you hate to lose dogs off your roster. But it's also a sign that the running back room is extremely healthy right now for Texas football. The secondary, you can't say so nearly as confidently. Does it feel like things are getting better talent-wise? Yes, but there were still plenty of struggles, including in the spring game this last Saturday. So to read just a little bit ago that Terrence Brooks is deciding to leave Austin to play his last year or two someplace else is a bit of a bummer. But then again, it's been a roller coaster ride with Terrence Brooks at that cornerback position over these last two seasons.
Yeah, I think you put it accurately. You know, the running back room is so loaded. And, you know, I was a huge Jaden Blue guy early on.
Yeah.
When we saw him with the real carries, I thought, man, this guy is not just – this guy has vision. He knows how to cut. He's got better feet than I thought. I mean, I'm not being hyperbolic, but Jaden Blue could be the best running back in the country this next year. Like, he is, I think, that talented. And they brought in some guys that really look the part, and they've just got a loaded room. And that room was not an issue. The secondary room was. And, you know, good luck to Terrence. I mean, he seemed like he did everything he could to be a really good football player here. I don't know if that's a coaching issue. I really don't know. But I do know that he didn't live up to probably what he thought his billing was and didn't have a good spring game. And my guess is they're, you know, looking at whether it's Takario Davis from Arizona, maybe in a transfer portal type situation, or maybe there were guys that just beat him out. But, you know, obviously best of luck to him. But,
sure.
You know, you mentioned experience. Experience is really important. But if I'm going out on the first date and she's gotten divorced 4 or 5 times, well, she's got more marriage experience than I do, but I'm not sure it's good.
That's a good point. I think overall his direction was a positive one, but development is very rarely perfectly linear. There are steps forward. There are steps back. It's just the steps back that he took were really big steps back. And ultimately, is he a better player now than he was 2 years ago? I think so, but I don't know that for certain. And while you'd like to think that in a third year as a starter, a guy is going to take even bigger steps forward, there are no guarantees with that, especially when a guy struggled, like you just said, like he did just a couple of days ago in that spring game, going up against some talented receivers, yes, but receivers who are brand new to this roster other than DeAndre Moore and Jonte Cook, guys who are a couple of years younger than Terrence Brooks.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel really good. Watch the spring game about where, I mean, just overall, they look more athletic. It reminds me of like that first time Mac really had it kind of rolling and you looked at a game and you're just like, oh my God, like they look the part and they look really, really quick, talented, strong. So I like the receiver room a lot, but you know, the secondary, like with any spring game, you walk out, you're like super fired up about that, but that means this isn't that good. And that's kind of what it was. And the fact that that was the weak link on the team last year, I mean, you and I talked about it right after the season. And if I'm Terry Joseph and Blake Gideon, you know, you got to sit in that room and be like, you know, guys, we're University of Texas. Like this room especially cannot be the weak link. You know, the kickers and punters, I mean, they're meeting rooms at the ping pong table and they've had no problem. So we've got to make sure that we get this straight. And I'm sure they're feeling pressure too. I'm convinced,
by the way, that if there weren't two other defensive assistants who left this offseason, you would have seen either Joseph or Blake Gideon replaced. But Steve Sarkisian and Kwiatkowski didn't want wholesale changes on that side of the ball, considering that they had just made their first ever college football playoff semifinal since it expanded to 4 teams.
I think you're probably right about that. I mean, I told you right away, I've got a really good connection. I think the top guy who covers Notre Dame football, Notre Dame sports, but football, who played in college, coached in college, and just does a great job, Brian Driscoll. And, you know, I talked with him when Joseph was hired. He was coming from Notre Dame, and he was only there for a year or two. But I said, hey, you know, what do you know about this? And he said, you can have him. And that's one of those you run into your boy, you know, girlfriend for us, boyfriend, their ex. And it's like, hey, you know, I'm dating Carol now. And he's like, dude, you can have her. It's like, oh, God, what am I getting into? And so I've not been overly impressed with the secondary.
Yeah, Tim Beck, gosh, there are countless examples over time, but Tim Beck's another recent example where it's like, oh, we just got Tim Beck as our offensive coordinator. Cool, even though nobody else seems to want the guy. All right, we're going to put a pause on this conversation. We will continue on the Longhorn Spring Game here on the other side. I am Trey Elling, joined by my good friend Kevin Dunn for the full hour here on Sports Day Plus on 102.7 ESPN.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Back with Kevin Dunn for the full hour here on Sports Day Plus, talking Longhorn Spring Game. Terrence Brooks entering the transfer portal, and we will eventually get to the NFL draft where we think Longhorns might end up and what the State of Texas teams may do coming up here in the next couple of days. Kevin, we were just talking about the secondary and how they looked on Saturday. Not great. The overall athleticism looked a whole lot better. But the story of the spring game, of course, is Arch Manning and how good he looked. Quinn Ewers only gets a couple of series early on, then he sits the rest of the way because we know what we have with Quinn Ewers. And Arch Manning, maybe he didn't surprise some, but considering that level of performance and just how on point he looked, the future is certainly bright for this program as it pertains to the quarterback room, not just with him, but also how Trey Owens performed as well as a true freshman.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I'm not here to start like a, you know, Quinn should be replaced, because I don't think that's the case at all. I think he's matured a bunch. He looked, you know, even stronger, which I think durability is something that he's working on. Obviously, he's got to work on his deep ball, but I was, you know, not surprised, but really, really happy to see what Arch looked like. And you're right, Trey Owens, too. I mean, you could argue after at least seeing it's a spring game, so I understand that. But, you know, Quinn Ewers made the third best deep ball in the quarterback room.
Oh, yeah.
Both those guys throw good deep balls, and the zip that Manning especially put on some balls where he had to fit it in there. He looks the part, man.
Yeah, and if nothing else, if Quinn suffers another injury that knocks him out for a game or a couple of games, which has happened these last couple of years, you feel a lot better about the backup quarterback situation now than you did in either of the two previous seasons. And that's not to say that Malik Murphy didn't help this team win games last year, but Arch Manning is much better suited to come in and really not skip a beat in terms of how the offense is performing up to that point, assuming that the offense is able to perform up to its potential this coming season.
You're exactly right about Quinn. I mean, and it's just more, it's not so much Quinn, it's the nature of the beast and playing quarterback. So pass protection is even more valuable with that. But there's a chance he is out for a game or two. And so we saw it with Malik, having a guy who can come in and really play. And Arch looks like he's a lot more ahead of Malik at that point, that he could come in and there's either not much of a drop off or there are some things that are better. Or, I mean, I'm pretty, you know, pretty bullish on kind of where that quarterback room is. And the other thing too, is that I think we're so lucky that it's Arch Manning, because if most people were not going to start and had that type of a spring game and were that hyped, they're in the transfer portal. But I think with his two uncles, his dad, probably his grandfather, probably a lot of things, money not really at play, he's got no problem. And I think they've told him, like Eli did at Ole Miss, he redshirted. Peyton came in, but Peyton didn't start. I mean, that would have been funny enough. Todd Helton was one of the starters that year's freshman year. And Peyton ended up starting.
Wait, the baseball player?
Todd Helton, Brandon Stewart, guy ended up transferring to A&M.
Yeah.
From, where is he from in Texas? I forgot. And then Peyton Manning. So Stewart and Manning were true freshmen. Helton would have been a junior. Yeah, Todd Helton was a lefty quarterback. Todd Helton was a pretty damn good athlete, man. Huh. But more probably Eli. You know, it's okay to redshirt. It's okay to take your time. It's okay to develop what you're doing and do it at the right pace. I think we've seen too many guys forced in the NFL to start before they were ready. And we've seen guys like Aaron Rodgers and Jordan Love and Pat Mahomes take that time to really digest everything and and not start until they're really ready. And I think at a position like quarterback, starting pitcher would be one. There are certain spots, I think, in sports that don't rush it. I know you want to rush it, but you can ruin a lot of stuff long term if you jump into the deep end when you should be doing laps in, you know, the shallow end.
Yeah, it's learning to crawl before you walk, learning to walk before you run, and patience has always been important, but it may never have been more important than it is right now, because we're in a society that seems to have just placed this false value on immediate gratification. And so when a guy doesn't have something handed to him immediately, well, he's looking at that grass is always greener scenario someplace else. And by the way, he's also being bribed to head to that other patch of grass. And unfortunately, far too often, we see a situation where a guy who thinks he's ready for something actually isn't when he's given that opportunity, versus Arch, who has the perspective of his uncles who got to sit out, uncles who had to play too soon, including Peyton, who took some serious lumps his first professional season with the Indianapolis Colts. And they said, look, your time will come. It's not a problem if you sit out, you gradually get reps here and there, you get your first snaps at the end of your true freshman season, and you may take some starter snaps a year or two after that. When it is your time, you will be ready to go, and you'll have the value, or the experience rather, of having gotten to watch things on the sideline and pick the brain of somebody else who played the position well at this level too, like Quinn Ewers has, because all accounts are that Quinn and Arch have a really good relationship in that regard.
I think they do. And I mean, I just from the players I've talked to that I'm still connected with when I was doing stuff at Morgan, the culture and the feel of the locker room has totally turned, which, getting back to your point too, losing a guy like Savion Red, like, they all loved him. He is a dog. And I totally understand where he's coming from, because he may go be a beast somewhere. Yeah. And you know, that's kind of a, I don't say win-win, because it's not a win for us losing him, but I totally get where he's coming from, and I hope he goes and crushes it. The whole feeling and you know, culture is probably used too vaguely and used in too many different, you know, ways. But it's definitely turned. And so, you know, I think Sark has the same role on third, but as we said, even after the semifinal run, you know, at that point, let's just fine tune the car. So there may be some position groups, some coaches, some whatever, where you just got to upgrade. And that's part of joining the SEC and part of trying to be a top four, top five program.
Well, and operating on a meritocracy too. And I realize there are some exceptions, Quinn Ewers being the incumbent starting quarterback and Steve Sarkisian having a hard time replacing his quarterbacks. And that is a pattern throughout his coaching history. It's not surprising that Quinn is not going to lose his job, even if Arch outperforms him in practices in the spring game. That's completely understandable, by the way. But pretty much every other position on the field, if there is a guy playing better than somebody else in the practice setting and then more game-type scenarios, whether you're talking about the glorified practice of the spring game or actual games themselves, all jobs should be on the line really at all times, especially when you're talking about the quarterback position or the cornerback position, excuse me, where you have these fragile egos and things can change pretty quickly from a guy going to someone who is very confident and capable on that island to where it's almost like he has the DB yips, to where all of a sudden he can't get out of his own way in man coverage. He's not doing the right things in zone coverage. And we saw too many examples of that from Terrence Brooks, not just last year, but later in the year last year too, especially in that semifinal game where he had complete coverage bust that led to huge gains, if not touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple of throws that Penix had to Romeo Dunze or McMillan or who's the tech transfer? I'm forgetting his name. Ryan Watts had some blanket coverage, some of the best coverage he's had. I think safety is probably a better spot for him, but he turned and ran, and you couldn't ask for anything else. And Penix dropped some of the most perfect balls I've ever seen in college, and like on a back hip. And the guy makes the adjustment, makes the plays. Brooks had a couple where they were wide ass open. And it just didn't seem to work out for whatever reason. But that's where Sark's got to figure out, are we recruiting the right guy? Are we developing them? Was that just a bust? Because that can happen too. Or not as good as we thought he was going to be. And hopefully Terrence can go on, find a greener pasture, get a, you know, a restart, a refresh. And I mean, he's talented. We know that. But playing secondary too in modern day football, I mean, they changed all the rules, not only for class action lawsuits, which they were had a bunch coming. So it's about safety. It was also about the NFL had gotten really boring, dude. It had, and you may be a hard, I'm a hardcore NFL guy, but if you thought that 15, 12 games with a guy having 29 carries for 110 yards, like what a rushing effort was fun football, then you and I look at football differently. And I don't mind defensive games, but they changed the rules for not only safety, quote unquote, but also to open it up to make it more offensive. And I'm not sure that legislation, the way to do that, I mean, outside of widening the field is probably the only way, but it's made it increasingly almost impossible to cover the way that, like when we had shutdown, corners growing up and cover guys, it was Darryl Green, it was Dion, you can get to Chris McAllister at Arizona, even in the pros, where you didn't get anything thrown on you. And these guys are going to have to change kind of that mindset and psychology that you're talking about, where you're going to give stuff up. You almost have to be a pitcher where it's like, dude, if I give up three solo bombs and we're up 6-3, I'm doing a good job.
Yeah, that's why I feel like these bend but don't break defenses is the best way forward for that side of the ball, at least as of right now. There will be another evolution at some point, or maybe even a rule change that sways things back towards the defense, but I'm not holding my breath on that, especially at the NFL level, because they want more points scored. And I think sometimes it can work to their detriment, but ultimately you are going to have a lot more to say about a 35-32 game, let's say, than a 9-6 clunker that involves five field goals and no touchdowns. He is Kevin Dunn. I am Trey Elling. We are chatting for the entire hour here on Sports Day Plus, talking Longhorn spring game. Coming up, it'll be the NFL draft, and who knows what else we'll get into right here on 102.7 ESPN.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Back with my best bud, Kevin Dunn, here on Sports Day Plus, talking football and more here on 102.7 ESPN. Kevin, we have one more thing to talk about before we move on to the NFL draft from the Longhorn spring game this last Saturday. Yes, it's a glorified practice, but it is some form of televised football. It's not the UFL happening this time of year, so we're going to talk about it. And we need to discuss the wide receivers because it is an entirely new group of pass catchers that these quarterbacks are throwing the football to. And at least through this one test, this one eyeball test, if you will, these receivers have got a lot going on, even if their names are no longer Xavier Worthy, Adonai Mitchell, Jordan Whittington, JT Sanders, and the like.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was very impressed by them. As much as we talk about DBs and maybe issues with that, some of that could have been the fact that quarterbacks looked really good and the receivers did. I mean, Isaiah Bond was a guy we recruited and signed at Morgan Stanley, so I kind of know his character and who he is, and his mom, Penny's the best. And so I was really fired up to see what he could do in this type of offense. I know he had couple plays early on he probably regrets, but he I thought he looked really good. I thought Jonte Cook looked really good. Ryan Wingo. I mean, there's a list of guys we can go through. I think they're going to be loaded at that position. And, you know, we're about to get into the NFL draft. The fact they could lose two guys that go in the top 40. And I think Jordan Whittington's going to be a guy who's going to hang around the league, dude. And JT Sanders. So there's four pass catchers. I think that they could be as good, if not better. Like, I think it's that talented of a roster or a position group.
And then Jonathan Brooks, too, did it. Well, he had some drop issues at the beginning of the season, but for the most part, he was a really nice receiver out of the backfield as well, up to the point of his knee injury. Matthew Golden is a guy who had a pretty quiet spring. Silas Bolden is going to be coming in from Oregon State at the end of this semester. And then DeAndre Moore is another guy. He obviously caught that bomb from Arch Manning, Arch's first throw of the game. So, yeah, the future does look bright. And Steve Sarkisian, may ask some questions about how things have been done in terms of hiring defensive assistants. He continues to make A-plus hires on the offensive side of the ball.
I think you're exactly right. I mean, he's been able to use his philosophy, and Sark is obviously the head engineer offensively about what they're going to do schematically, what they're going to do with kind of everything they're trying to put in place. And to have all those guys be able to mesh the way they have, and like you said, replace some guys, especially at wide receiver, the wide receiver coach, it's been really impressive. It's always tough, too, when you have a co-OC. I know he's not calling plays, but usually offensive line coaches, you know, I mean, they are, you know, snuff coming out. And it's like, let me tell you something about running the football, get physical. And, you know, when you've got a new age, and I would call Sark a new age play caller, and I mean that as a complete compliment, not the new age hipster you run into on Rainy Street.
Yeah, because that would be really passive aggressive play calling.
Can you imagine? So I don't really want to call it, but let's go jet sweep, even though it's stupid and lame and racist. But
I wanted to call that play, but you gave me a nasty look, so I called something else. So really, it's your fault.
Yeah, and by the way, my head's down the whole time, so I haven't watched any of the game. It's like, no, you got to be watching the game, dude. Your eyes got to be up. I know it's eye contact, and that scares the crap out of you, but give it a shot, you know? You may meet someone who can help you out in life. Oh, I don't do that. And it's like, that's why you're living in your mom's basement, so keep it up. Yeah, I'm getting some tats, and I'm getting jeans that may fit an Ethiopian if he was anorexic, but we're not sure. By the way, so you're at the office right now? Yeah, dude. I'm at the coffee shop. I'm like, okay, all right, just checking.
Acting like you're working, gaining a sense of self-importance because your laptop is open, even though you haven't done anything other than scroll through Facebook and Instagram over the last 2 hours now.
I quit coffee for months there because I just got too addicted to it, and you know that, but so like now I'm very like an ex heroin addict. I'm like, hey, I can, you know, and by the way, if you're an ex heroin addict, don't ever do it again. But you know, I'm very, very smart and really like play it out when I go get one. But like the amount of people in there that are acting like they're working, and maybe they are. And if you are, I'm sure some are, go for it. But you're like, just the mean mugs and man, Austin used to be such a friendly place with eye contact and hey, how you doing? Hey, good to see you. And it's part generational, and it's part just all these people from all over the country coming in and don't understand that in Austin, you give courtesy waves, you make eye contact, you give a little nod. How you doing? How you doing? Have a good day. Have a good day. I'm not looking for a 45-minute conversation with a stranger either, okay, man? I just come from a different generation, and I'm from Austin, and we make eye contact, and we talk to people, okay? That's what we do. That's what Austin is. You ain't changing that. Although you kind of are.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's basic pleasantries. We don't need to get into extensive conversations with one another. Let's just treat one another differently for a change. The simple highs and byes, the simple how you doings, maybe one follow-up question, or maybe it's as simple as just not looking completely miserable in your own existence as you're sitting there on a couch or at a little cafe table glaring at somebody because they may be look or act a way that is unbecoming in your opinion.
I gave a courtesy wave the other day on MoPac, a real one, because you know I can give the very sarcastic one too. Oh, thanks for letting me in there, man. You know, I gave a real one and got the finger back. I was like, bro, like, let me guess, California plates?
Yeah, well, a lot of times it is out-of-state license plates. No, the one that gets me the most, though, the person shooting you the finger in traffic is when you're trying to just help everybody else out by getting traffic going again because they're clearly not paying attention, or you honk because they're like drifting into your lane because they're doing the staring at their cell phone drift where you start drifting to the left and you're like trying to keep a major accident from happening at 70 miles per hour. And you look over at them and they shake their fist or they give you the finger like you just did something wrong, whereas you're the one trying to keep things from just completely devolving into chaos and an accident that could cost multiple lives. Or it's something as simple as being at a red light and the front person at the red light, which, by the way, is a civic responsibility to be on top of your game at the front of a red light. Yes. Far too often, somebody is clearly staring down at their phone. You give them one Mississippi, two Mississippi, at three Mississippi, you're getting a beep. If you last two more Mississippis, you're getting a much longer honk from me. Don't give me the finger in return. Give me the wave like you're sorry, that you realize that you did something wrong there and you're going to try better the next time. But sadly, we're at a point in society where far too many people want to double down on their own stupidity.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I gave one the other day. It was a left turn. And I probably give a quicker Mississippi. I'm that kid with all-time quarterback who goes, one Mississippi. And then like, it's like, all right, you barely gave one S, much less four. Okay, so, and I'm not sure about the Mississippi part of that. But it's like, well, you can't rush right now. You barely gave a Mississippi. You barely gave an Alabama, much less a Mississippi. I mean, come on. I think all of us that have been doing this forever, we've got so many different levels of honk. I've got that bang, which I rarely give. Unfortunately, I do now a lot with people just darting out in traffic. But there's also the, hey, little friendly. I mean, you know, most of us have the repertoire with our honks like Yu Darvish does with pitches. You know, we've got like 19 of them. Like, oh, you want the cutter? You want the cutter fast? You want the cutter really horizontal? You want the slider? You want the, you know, we can do that. So I gave up and looked up and they gave me the what? I'm like, dude, you've been sitting there clearly on your phone. And now there are people behind us that are going to be 7 minutes home, or either be 7 minutes that they get home. That's a little bit later. And you know what? God knows that 7 minutes could have actually been something. Like, it's basic responsibility in societal behavior that it's funny. I mean, this new generation, they act like, you know, that all they care about is the environment and like that. And which is okay, but I'm like, well, how about just treating each other with basic human respect? Can we start there, and then we'll see if Pluto's going to explode tomorrow?
Yeah, there's such a victim mentality that exists in modern times, especially with younger generations. And I hate to put the full blame on them, because a lot of it has to do with the environment that they're in and just the things that they were told at a most impressionable age. But the millennial and Gen Z generations, they make it all about how they have been wronged and how something that's happened to them has affected them negatively emotionally, versus acknowledging your emotions, which is important. But also recognizing that you shouldn't let yourself be defined by your emotions, but a sort of resilience or grit or determination that you have in fighting back from something negative that's happened to you. And I think the younger generations than Gen Z will start to get that. You'll get that course correction, but there are a couple generations worth that I'm going to be terrified when they're actually the ones responsible for running everything.
Yeah, I hope it's cyclical, and I hope there is course correction like you talked about. And usually there is. I mean, go to the Romans and say, well, not always, but that hopefully there will be. But I think you're exactly right. It's just, you know, we're in our mid-40s. We're in that weird generation of we just were allowed to start showing our emotions, and now you can get too emotional with stuff. But getting back to your point, the other thing too is like, parents, like, you gotta stop telling your kids they're great at everything, or that she's a princess, or that, you know, there needs to be some. And most of my friends are like, you are great at it. There's kind of old school parenting with new school parenting, because there's a lot of stuff that our parents' generation did that, you know, I know you don't spank. I mean, you've spanked me, but I paid for it. It was for charity. It was for charity, people.
we're up on a commercial break. Let's continue this on the other side. He is Kevin Dunn, my best friend, and a guy who is going to be joining this radio show a little bit more regularly going forward. I am Trey Elling. This is Sports Day Plus here on 102.7 ESPN.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Final segment with Kevin Dunn here on Sports Day Plus. We were just talking about some of our biggest pet peeves with society. It unfortunately begins with younger generations and their inability to hold themselves accountable and to show a form of resilience. Instead, they just victim blame and seem to have a reason why something went wrong, and it rarely has to do with them. And also talking about parenting and parenting parents trying to help with the course correction by being a little bit more honest with their kids. There is a line with that, though, that unfortunately I probably cross at times where I'm being a little bit too honest. You want to be honest without being cruel, and that's where it is hard for me sometimes, especially when your kid is being a little asshole to you in return, if I'm being completely straight about it. Not to go millennial on you and to point the finger someplace else. Ultimately, it does fall on me, though, to be the more mature one, to keep the level head and to keep from saying or doing something that I'm going to regret 5 seconds later.
It does. And look, I think both my parents were great parents, Bob and Cindy, but Bob, Southside Chicago, Cindy grew up in East Austin. Like, you know, feelings were not the most important thing. And so they did bust my ass and tell me some hard truths that at the time I thought was really mean. And now I look back and still think it's mean and actually should have filed something back in the day. What was I doing? No, I look back and I'm like, I'm glad. Ex-girlfriends would say, maybe I'm too calloused, but I'm not a softie when it comes to stuff like that in the real world. And that's what, no pun intended with me, that's what you get. Like, I think a lot of these kids have been in safe spaces. And I mean, I imagine the term safe space when we were a kid, that was the hamper when you were like four, you know, that can you imagine getting out to the world that we've been in, that everyone's in? Let's say it's a dog eat dog world. And I've run into so many business people that have screwed me over. It's a dog grabs a knife somehow with its paws and stabs you in the back of your neck world.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And if you think there are safe spaces, good luck. Good luck, bro.
Yeah. You don't end up dead either. You end up seriously wounded, but somehow you're still alive and you've got to pick yourself up and keep going forward. And real life doesn't allow for safe spaces, I guess, unless you're working at a tech company. But hey, you're not going to be working at that tech company much longer because AI is taking all those jobs in the next 3 to 5 years.
Right. And by the way, they'll also fire your ass. Like,
yes, they will.
They'll give you a safe space, but then they'll fire you. And it's like, well, I had a safe space, but now I'm back with the parents at 32. And it's like, well, I guess that safe space wasn't that safe, huh?
Oh, that's happening with a lot of these tech companies right now. I know examples at Dell where people were allowed to do the work from home thing in COVID. And now these companies are pivoting and they're holding over their heads the fact that jobs are being replaced by AI and that they won't be able to advance in said company anymore if they don't come into the office a certain number of times a week. And people are having a hard time with that one. But it's like, good Lord, welcome to the real world. You are going to be more productive if you are in an office setting. And I'm talking about, 60 to 70% of us. There are that 30 to 40% who are conversational rapists who do nothing but walk around the office and just distract people from the task at hand because they can't help themselves and they feel the need to talk at all times to all people, even though they are full of rhetoric and a whole lot of other BS. The rest of us are actually able to get stuff done, and it's important to be face-to-face a decent amount of the time in helping to do so.
I agree with most of that. I mean, I go into the office at least 2 times a week, usually more, but like my job is to be out at lunches. So if you have a sales job,
yeah,
it may be a little different, but even then,
no, there is more networking with what you're talking about, whether it's your specific job or just a general sales job. You have to be, but that is a face-to-face thing too, though. You know, that's not you cold calling people from the comfort of your own home.
I'm not at home working. I'm out, trust me, a bunch, yeah. But there's a mix, but like for most jobs, I totally agree with that. I know there are people that work from home and are very productive. And these people can find it out quickly, whether you can work from home or whether you just logged in and you're cooking, you know, tuna half the time and doing laundry and checking out, you know, what's on TV. That's the one thing I could never work from home, because when I have, there's nothing on TV during the day, like nothing.
Terrible.
So what am I going to do? Just sit at home on my couch?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to turn to the streamers at that point and find something that you can binge watch, I guess, because just flipping through regular television, it's going to be a bunch of soap operas, it's going to be cheesy game shows,
that 700-pound person and her twin sister, and I'm like, oh, God.
Those sorts of reality shows that are supposed to be tugging at the heartstrings while also making you feel better about yourself, too, by the way. It's not like you just care about that person. You care about that person because, holy shit, are they in a much worse position than you are in your own terrible life.
Yeah, boy, I just checked my 401k, and I've gained a bunch of weight, and boy, I feel better than Sheila does over there. Boy, you and I, we were old souls early in our life. And before I knew you, I just talked to enough people that knew you, and you've talked to enough people that knew me. And they're like, dude, he was an old man at 9. And now that we're getting there, we are uphill both ways, snowing in Austin, buddy, you know?
Yeah, well, it wasn't necessarily the first hint that we were both old souls, but the fact that we were both willingly wearing sweatpants during picture day in fifth or sixth grade, I think is pretty telling of just how we felt about fashion trends at that time. And that's a good indicator early on that you really don't give a damn about whatever fads exist, although I did get caught up in a little bit of that in junior highs with Z Capricci's and things like that. Ultimately, it
Did you wear Jerbos?
I may have had a pair of Jerbos or two. There were they were
expensive. I got one for Christmas, and that was it.
Yeah, I got the one Jerbos, the one Z Cavaricci's. I had a fancy pair of loafers. I don't remember what brand they were. And that lasted through seventh and eighth grade. And then I got to high school, and it was another reality check. And I went back to my fairly conservative dress code, although I was probably a sucker to Abercrombie and Fitch once or twice.
Yeah, I was too. But yeah, I remember wearing sweatpants in fifth grade almost every day. And someone asked me, and I was like, you know, none of these chicks want any part of me. Like, it's not going to matter. Like, I might as well be comfortable. You know,
I made a play at one girl in elementary school, Mindy, and I won't say her last name. She was the first girl to develop boobs. And she was really attractive, and every guy wanted her. And for some reason, fat, stupid, pre-adolescent Trey thought he had a chance. And I went up to her and talked to her about it, and it was very clear she wanted nothing to do with my stinky fat ass. And then I slumped back into my own insecurities for the next however long until I finally asked another girl out, which wasn't until deep into high school.
Well, wasn't that when you were taking all that diet stuff and you were either farting or smelled bad because of it?
Well, so in, gosh, this would have been between sophomore and junior year. At the end of my sophomore year, my grandparents, getting back to the whole honesty thing, are like, Trey, because I talk about being fat as a pre-adolescent. My fat kidness didn't really set in until junior high. Right around the time my parents get divorced, my mom's going to night school to try and get her master's, and we had pizza a lot. On top of the fact that I wasn't nearly as physically active, not playing nearly as many sports, and so, of course, I started gaining weight, and I ultimately looked like a sack of potatoes. Well, near the end of my sophomore year, my loving grandparents are like, they did so as nicely as possible, but they let me know, hey, you're putting on some bad weight right now. We're not sure what to do, but we just want to make
you... Can you imagine grandparents now doing that?
Make you aware of the situation. Yeah, no, I cannot. And so that...
He was fat-shaming us.
I know, right? And so that stuck with me. And so that summer, I actually stayed with him working for my granddad's company, and I set out to lose however much weight was humanly possible. And so I started doing Ultra Slim Fast the summer between my sophomore and junior year. So I would have been 15 at the time. Maybe I was 16. But no, I was 16. And I spent that entire summer Slim Fast for breakfast, Slim Fast for lunch, and a healthy dinner. By the time it was all said and done, I went back to school for my junior year, 40 pounds down, looking like a completely different person. And then I started adding some resistance training into the equation. I got into really good shape by the end of my high school days.
But wasn't there like a flatulence you told me or some type of smell? Was it your gas or something?
Oh,
like that?
Yeah, no. Ultra Slim Fast gives you gas like, I don't know, eating the end of what's left at a Taco Bell at 3 a.m. I mean, it was wretched. I had to work in my own room. And anytime somebody came into that room, I mean, I was just farting all day. That person was probably having to hold their breath to do so because otherwise they would have passed out under the carpet right there.
Tell you what, that will keep the busy office bee who does nothing but tries to go to every office and BS with people from coming into your place. He's like, I'm going to pass on this room.
Yeah, no, the conversational rapist had no choice but to skip out on my room. Not that I had a ton to say anyhow as some stupid 16-year-old kid, but that ensured that that person would not be paying me a visit, thankfully.
Oh, no, but if it was your grandfather's company, trust me, he would have been paying you a visit four times a day and like, hey, you know, almost like a pedophile, but more in a financial way, you know, trying to just keep his job at your grandfather's company, knowing he didn't produce it all.
I think they call that business grooming.
Jesus, man. Well, we can transition into the NFL draft if you want.
Well, we could, but we're also done for today's show. The 45 minutes or so of content that we get on the radio, it is going to fly by with my guy, Kevin Dunn. Expect to hear him regularly going forward. When? Well, you're just going to have to listen to the promos because we're not set on any particular day as it stands right now. But always great talking, my friend. Thank you so much.
Always so much fun, man. It's so easy. It did fly by. I did want to get in some draft stuff, but we had fun on the other end and definitely talked some Texas football. So very bullish on, to give you a term that I've been using too much, on Texas football. And I think the draft is going to show exactly where this program is, because they're going to have a lot of guys for the first time in a long time drafted on day one and day two. And that tells you a lot where the program is.
Very well said. He is Kevin Dunn. I am Trey Elling. This is Sports Day Plus. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll be back tomorrow at 6. That includes a 2-segment conversation with Justin Wells of Inside Texas. In the meantime, have yourselves a great rest of the evening and hook 'em.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.